Hello and welcome to The Corridor here on CFRC 101.9 FM in Kingston, Ontario, and podcasting on Spotify and Apple Music. I'm Dinah Jansen, and with me is CFRC Local Journalism Initiative news producer Jesse Bell. This regional news program features news from Kingston and area provided by local and regional journalists through the support of the Local Journalism Initiative and the Community Radio Fund of Canada. Welcome and enjoy. Hello and welcome to The Corridor. I'm Dinah Jansen, and today I'm joined by CFRC's Local Journalism Initiative producer, Jesse Bell. Our first story is from CFRC's Local Journalism Initiative reporter, Christina Lurie, covering the launch of a new motor coach service connecting Norman Rogers Airport to Toronto's Pearson International Airport.
Hello, I'm Christina Lurie, Local Journalism Initiative reporter for CFRC 101.9 FM in Kingston, Ontario. Coming up are some of the top news stories in Kingston and the Islands. You can listen to CFRC's news programs Today in YGK and Kingston Currents on Mondays, Tuesdays, and Wednesdays at 5 p.m. or subscribe to our podcasts on Spotify and Apple Music. If you have any Kingston news tips you'd like to share, you can reach me at news@cfrc.ca.
It was announced on Tuesday that a new connection will link Kingston's Norman Rogers Airport to Toronto Pearson International Airport. Air Canada, in partnership with ground transportation company Landline, is launching a service to bring passengers from YGK Airport to Pearson via a luxury motor coach service. The service, which launches on September 23rd, is being billed as a seamless connection. Travelers can book a single itinerary on Air Canada's website, check in at Kingston's airport, and continue on to a connecting flight from Pearson, all under one booking. Two round trips will run daily between YGK Airport and Pearson, with the bus having space for 36 passengers. Bernard Tavernier, manager of regional airlines and markets with Air Canada, expanded on what the service will offer.
This innovative ground-air connection is designed to make regional travel more convenient, reliable, and accessible. Customers can now book a single itinerary through Air Canada that includes a comfortable Wi-Fi equipped motor coach ride with Kingston from Kingston to Pearson and vice versa, all timed perfectly within the Air Canada flights. We'll introduce a double daily service, connecting customers from airport to airport, providing seamless airline experience. Travelers will enjoy checked baggage transfer, coordinated schedules, and the ease of going from Kingston to global destinations through one smooth connection.
Tavernier also had the following response when asked about the price point.
So the goal for this is to have minimal fare, if not none, and to beat all markets. We want to ensure that customers that are using this are using it as an asset to book on Air Canada flights. So the goal is to beat every other market out there.
Since Air Canada suspended its regional flights to and from Kingston Airport in 2020, the city has been working to bring air service back. Craig Desjardins, Director of Strategy, Innovation and Partnerships with the city, spoke to the significance of this addition to travel options.
It's been incredibly challenging. Obviously, post-pandemic, the aviation sector has just been hammered. But to be able to be constantly working to try and bring air services back, it's been frustrating at times. The most recent frustration is the U.S.-Canada tariff issues, which has had huge impact on sort of travel to the States, which has obviously impacted the airlines. But, you know, again, working with good partners is the key. Working with a partner like Air Canada that has the global network, being able to come into Pearson Airport and jump on and be here directly. Again, it's all about service. It's all about quality. If you haven't had a chance to jump on the bus, it's like a business class seating. It's got high-speed Wi-Fi. It's a pretty nice service.
City Councilor Wendy Stevens says the service will be a game changer for local travelers.
The multimodal nature of this is really exciting, and I think it really is an opportunity to remove a lot of the frustration that comes with going to Pearson Airport when you can board here and get there and come home so easily. I think that this is, you know, a real opportunity. There have been calls for this from the community. I'm the district counselor and I get a lot of questions about when are we getting service back? So I'm thrilled that we finally have the ability to get people around the world where they need to go straight from home. So this is really exciting for students, for faculty, as the deputy mayor said, for residents who want to take a vacation, economic development. People are always trying to come to Kingston, and also for tourism, especially too. That's a really key factor. So I think this is a huge win for our community.
This has been Christina Lurie with CFRC News, supported by the Local Journalism Initiative.
Thank you, Chris. Next is Dinah Jansen with a story from the local journalism initiative reporter for the Brockville Recorder and Times, Keith Dempsey, about Gananoque's fourth annual Les Festivilles event.
Thank you, Jesse. Music, laughter, and bilingual celebration filled the streets, parks, and waterfront in Gananoque last weekend, drawing locals and visitors alike at the town's fourth annual Les Festivilles summer festival. It began on Thursday, August 7th in Town Park, with the Good Fortune Duo easing the crowd into the weekend. Trivia followed, drawing friendly competition before the action shifted to the Gananoque Municipal Marina for an outdoor film screening under the stars. Friday belonged to the kids. At 125 Water Street, the Thousand Islands Boat Museum and Gananoque Public Library teamed up for a morning of activities, followed by more fun at the museum in the afternoon. That night, Joel Stone Park came alive with Erica Brighthill Band and the Yvonne Petit Band, their music rolling over the St. Lawrence River. Saturday's town park was a swirl of color and sound, caricature sketches, face painting, and the jive rockabilly of Barrow Gang. As the evening fell, Joel Stone Park lit up again with the Chantel Hackett Band and Les Rat Swamp. Sunday closed things off with family fun, the Juggling Chef, Monkey Rock Music, Carnival Games, and the Tex Western Show, ending with a live French theater performance. Gananoque Town Councillor David Osmond, one of the festival's driving forces, noted how pleased he was to see the festival grow and improve with every iteration. One way to measure success, Osmond said, is to see other partners and organizations get involved, especially with a bilingual festival. He suggested the province, City Cruises Gananoque, Downtown Gananoque, and Valley Eats, just to name a few who could become part of the event. Thank you to Keith Dempsey for that story. Now over to Jesse Bell with a story from the LGI reporter for the Morrisburg leader, Philip Blancher, about a possible pay raise for members of the SDG Council.
Thank you, Dinah. A report brought to the council in July recommended several changes to council remuneration, including pay and expenses in Stormont, Dundas, and Glengarry. The report from administration highlighted a 0.4% increase in current council pay for this year and tying future annual pay increases to the current pay policy for staff. That policy uses the Consumer Price Index to set the increase. Council pay was previously not tied to any automatic increase, but rather set once per term review as required under the Municipal Act. Meeting allowances will also be increased, and a new half-date meeting rate will be added. Conference expenses and mileage expenses will also be increased, while the amount budgeted to the annual Warden's Banquet will be increased from $5,000 to $7,000. However, some of that budget is offset by ticket sales. County's councillors currently receive $15,663 for their annual remuneration plus expenses, and the warden receives $41,951 as head of council. A comparison chart of the 13 municipalities in the Eastern Ontario Wardens Caucus show that SDG has the third lowest compensation rate for elected officials. Kawartha Lakes leads the councils in the EOWC, with councillors earning $49,000. per year, and the warden earning closer to $115,000 per year. Kawartha Lakes and Prince Edward are both single-tier municipalities without a lower-tier township structure. Neighboring Prescott Russell leads all the two-tier county municipalities, paying councillors $47,000 and their warden $71,000. Leeds and Grenville pay councillors $29,000 and their warden $56,000. Councillor Tony Fraser from North Dundas suggested using the formula that Prescott Russell follows for its council remuneration based on population and growth. There, the warden compensation is calculated at 3/4 the population of the county, or 75 cents per resident. Councillors earn 1/2 of the population total of the county, or 50 cents per resident. Statistic Canada reported PR's population in 2021 at 95,639, and SDG Counties has about 66,792 residents. County's CAO Maureen Adams suggested that any revisions or possible increased remuneration could be phased in at the direction of council. Staff will take feedback to council and bring a revised report at the August meeting.
Thank you to Keith Dempsey for that story. Now over to the LJR reporter for CJAI-FM Amherst Island Radio, Ted Evans, with a story about Loyalist Township's possible move away from the use of paper ballots for elections.
Hi, I'm Ted Evans, local journalism initiative reporter and news director at CJAI, Amherst Island Radio, 101.3 FM in Stella, Ontario. Coming up are some of the top news stories from Loyalist Township. You can hear Amherst Island Radio's news program, North Shore News, on 101.3 Amherst Island Radio or online at cjai.ca. For showtimes throughout the week, check the schedule on our website at cjai.ca.
In a move similar to some other lower-tier municipalities in Lennox and Addington County, Loyalist Township staff have recommended moving away from paper ballots entirely for future elections. The only options available would be by phone, internet, or in person at one of five voting locations in which voters would use a tablet or other electronic device. Addington Highlands have decided to only conduct votes by internet and telephone, whereas Stone Mills will be using a hybrid method combining electronic and paper options. According to staff, Greater Napanee is currently undertaking a public survey to collect preferred voting methods. Operations clerk with the township, Kayla Hawley, explains the township's history and process for internet voting.
Internet voting has been offered in Loyalist Township since 2014. And with this voting method, electors receive their voting information letter and it outlines how they can access the voting system. So electors will log into a secure voting portal using their provided credentials to access the digital ballot, which mirrors a paper ballot. The elector then clicks their option and will have the ability to review the selection of candidate before the vote is officially cast. The vote will then be encrypted to protect the privacy of that elector, and all the information is stored in a secure digital database. In some cases, voters could have the option to verify their vote was received and counted, and this is done with a unique tracking code. With this method, election results can be provided immediately after the voting period closes.
Hawley explains the township's history and process for telephone voting.
Telephone voting has also been offered by Loyalist Township since 2014. With this voting method, electors will receive their voting information and a letter which outlines the phone number they need to access for that voting system. Electors then dial into a secure voting portal and use those provided credentials. And then once authenticated, the system reads out the ballot using a text-to-speech or pre-recorded audio. Voters respond by pressing numbers on their keypad to select their choices. Before the submission is final, the system provides an audio review to confirm the elector's selection. The vote is then encrypted to protect privacy and is also transmitted to a secure server. With this method, election results can also be provided immediately after the voting period closes.
Township Clerk Ann Kantharaja explains the reasoning staff are recommending five voting locations.
I've anticipated up to five voting locations, and the reason it's up to five voting locations is because there is potentially, if the ward boundary review changes are in effect for the 2026 election, then I intend to have five voting locations, one per each ward, and so they need to be staffed.
Kantharaja speaks about recommending extra voting days as well.
I have also increased the number of voting days at physical locations. So in 2022, there was only one day of in-person voting available, and that was voting day. And in the proposed budget, I have asked for cost to accommodate up to three full days of voting. So electors have multiple chances to go to a voting location to cast their ballot or make changes to the voters list or get help to vote.
With only electronic options available from home or in person, Kantharaja notes a possible need for changing the name of voting locations.
Instead of voting locations, they would be referred to as voter help centers or something like that. So not to give the idea that you have to go to a voting location to vote. These voting voter help centers would have devices available where people can vote. They would have election officials making changes to the voters list. And what electors could do is they could walk in, get their voter notification card if they weren't already on the voters list or if they lost it, and then they can just walk away or they could use some of the devices that are available.
Kantharaja explains what the in-person process might look like for voters.
The voting locations would be set up similar to what you see for paper ballots. An elector would walk in, they have their voter notification card with them. They go to behind the screen, and then they would see a tablet or an iPad or a laptop instead of a paper ballot. And if they needed help, similar to paper ballots, they would sign an affidavit asking an election official to assist, and the election official will get them to sign that piece of paper and then go behind the screen and help them vote.
Councillor Jake Ennis showed his support for moving away from paper ballots.
I'd like to get voter participation higher than 29%, so whatever we can do, I'd be in favor of that. But I do think things like more polling stations open for more days, more voting days, more communication, those types of things probably would help get the rate up. And, you know, for me, if it was a decision of if you don't have the paper on site, but you have internet on site, that saves money, and that money can be used for some of those other things like more days, more communication, more sites, I'd be more inclined to lean that way. Clearly, many residents like to still go to polling stations. Like, this is 1,000 plus. That's, you know, quite a high number. So, you know, polling stations and the number of them and then how long they're open is very important.
Ennis went on to note how this option would give staff the ability to use funds and resources in other useful areas.
I look at it as voting at home or voting at the polling station, and both are important options to offer. And if we can offer the electronic at the polling stations, and there's some budget there to try and increase the voting rate, other ways, communication, the hours and the days, I think that's a good way to go.
Councillor Lorna Willis and Councillor Carol Parks chose not to support the motion as they felt it wasn't the right time to move away from paper ballots. Willis noted conversations she's had with members of the public.
I had a lot of conversations about this over the weekend, and I heard very clearly that people are not prepared to walk away from paper ballots, that they would be very uncomfortable with that. And most of those people were seniors, and I would hate to alienate people who do vote. I don't think we're ready to move away from a paper ballot yet.
Councillor Paul Broderick shared his opinion of paper ballots and the need to move forward.
I'm old school too, and I appreciate the paper thing, but I think it's time to move ahead. And I think is, how do we get, as Councillor Innes said, from 29% to something better? You know, I think the big thing that I think from my point of view that I'm learning as a counselor is the communication piece, however you get it out there. And there's still going to be that feeling of community if people choose to go and vote because they don't have the technology or whatever at that help center or whatever you want to, however you want to word it. And I know there's going to be maybe some, maybe use the word backlash, but I guess, you know, progress has a price, I guess. And if that's me not getting elected, if I ran again, that's the price I pay.
For Amherst Island Radio and the Local Journalism Initiative, I'm Ted Evans.
Thank you to Ted Evans for that story. Over to the Local Journalism Initiative reporter for CJPE, Brenda Little, with a story about a motorcycle festival coming to Prince Edward County.
Base 31 is the historic 750-acre former World War II airbase in Prince Edward County, and they hosted the Motorcraft Festival over the long weekend. Motorcycle enthusiasts came from far and away to take in the festival that celebrates the spirit of motorcycling, where culture, speed, and artistry come together. The festival was packed with events, historic and artistic exhibits, and a full vendor village. Festival goers could camp on the site, take in the food commissary, and enjoy Saturday night's rock concert. Corey and Johnny from Highway Heathens gives us some insight into the culture.
We are a professional stunt team called the Highway Heathens. We travel all across Canada and the U.S. doing high-performance stunts.
And what is this this thing back here? It looks like
that
a circus tent.
That is called the Wall of Death. So there's a gentleman and a lady that go round and round and round until they get dizzy, and then they come down.
On motorbikes?
On motorcycles, yes.
Wow.
Yeah. It's so crazy.
So why did they do that?
I think it's just everybody, you know, as that little kid, you kind of, when you first got a bicycle, you wanted to do a skid and a wheelie, and some of us never grow up.
Start with a big wheel and move to Harley.
Yeah.
And it's got to have something to do with addiction to adrenaline.
It is adrenaline. It is testosterone. I mean, it's, you know, it's excitement. But it's all these people and the companies that are involved in these kind of festivals, they're enthusiasts. They just, they live and breathe and they bleed oil.
My background's from the military, so you're talking about adrenaline, being a combat veteran. Watching the Highway Heathens go up on one wheel is similar to that excitement that I got overseas. So that's how I got on the brand, working with Crooked Clubhouse and the Highway Heathens. So it's like-minded. It's like a big family that supports each other, and you get out there and we showcase our work and what we do with our designs and bikes and support the community.
And how long have you been doing this?
Well, I'm 54 now. I started when I was 18. So very, very long time. Decades and decades.
Yeah.
Chop, I'm actually, neither of us are the stunt guys. We're the promoters and the owners of the company. But
nice.
What we try and do is create a safe platform for the riders to showcase their skills.
Get them parts.
You know?
And,
yeah, get them parts from the manufacturers. We do a $5 million liability insurance coverage for every event we do so that everybody is, you know, secure and safe.
It's media coverage, just kind of showcase.
It's all about having fun.
Yeah, exactly.
Right.
Creating smoke and doing burnouts.
It's not just about speed and bikes. Ray from Fallen Riders tells us more.
Can you tell me about what you do with your company?
Well, with the Fallen Riders, what we do is we help fellow riders that are in bike accidents. We help them get back on their feet. We try to raise money for their family. We do charity events. We really try to pull the motorcycle community together.
And you were telling me, sir, about how you help them get prosthetics.
Yeah, we'll help you get your prosthetic limbs fitted for your bike. You know, just get you back riding regular life. We're not a sympathy team. We get you back and active and you're in great mindset.
Yeah.
It's a big part of the whole deal.
We put on the majority of the big motorcycle events in Ontario. Everything we do is for charity. And for example, if someone's in an accident, loses their leg, we have a full support team of other riders that lost their leg, and we connect everybody together to help everybody through it so at least people can see there's a light at the end of the tunnel. We have grief counselors to help if somebody was injured and loses a family member. So
and then we just try to spread awareness and come to all the motorcycle events and bring the motorcycle community together.
That's our goal, is bring the motorcycle community together. And we really try to change people's views on motorcycles, right? That's our goal.
You were saying that you had injuries yourself?
Yes, I've had 2 brain surgeries. I was in really bad shape, and I started the Fallen Riders because when it happened to me, I didn't have anybody to point me in the right direction. I fell into a really dark spot, and I ended up helping other people becoming an activist, and it flourished into something that's just a beautiful thing.
And some people come for the history. Vintage bikes in a vintage World War II aircraft hangar.
Well, my name's Life Radford, and I just drove my Norton Commando 850 from Shediac, New Brunswick, here to Ontario. And I broke down once, and I was able to fix it just outside of Montreal. And I pulled in yesterday to visit my best friend who lives here, and we wanted to take in the show. So I'm just here to see the old classic Nortons that have been rebuilt, refurbished, and look like they're brand new. Piece of history, isn't it?
And that World War II piece over there, sitting on base 31.
Right. Isn't that iconic?
Yeah.
Really,
yeah,
something else. So it's a real privilege to see these pieces of history.
For the Local Journalism Initiative, frequencynews.ca, and CJPE County FM, I'm Brenda Little.
Thank you to Brenda Little for that story. Over to the Local Journalism Initiative reporter for CFWN, Dan Jones, with a story about a youth-led charity initiative in Northumberland County.
2 decorative parking meters could soon be installed in Cobourg after 3 high school students recommended these meters serve to raise funds for local charities. Molly Spywack, Roy Vanderheiden, and Avery McPherson of the Kindness Collective Fund presented to Cobourg Council Wednesday, suggesting a coin meter be situated near Victoria Hall while a digital meter be placed by the waterfront. The digital meter would be equipped with a QR code to allow pedestrians to donate directly to a designated charity. Vanderheiden says Cobourg Charities would benefit greatly from this program.
Our idea is to repurpose 2 parking meters and place 1 down at the waterfront and 1 at a singular spot. The revenue from these meters would not go towards parking fees, but would go towards a selected charity. All proceeds would go directly to the charity or non-for-profit, and we could rotate quarterly throughout charities or non-for-profits. They would be local co-work organizations, and all proceeds would be donated through the town.
To encourage enthusiasm, local artists would compete for the design of the meters, which would be in accordance with Coburg colors and themes. The students proposed a one-year pilot project selecting one charity to benefit from the proceeds. Yet if the program is a success, the charities would rotate quarterly. The charities would be awarded based on town officials' recommendations. Kindness Collective is hoping to raise $10,000 a year through this program. Coburg collects approximately $1,400 a year per parking meter. A similar program has been launched in Delta, British Columbia. Councillor Adam Biro says he is in favor of this as it may help those in need.
I really like this idea. I think this is a great way to give back to the community and people in need, as well as I think this is actually going to make people want to pay for parking, which I think is amazing. So congratulations and thank you for bringing this.
Coburg Council unanimously passed a motion to direct town officials to study this matter further before a final decision. A timeline was not established. Reporting for CFWN and the Local Journalism Initiative, I'm Dan Jones.
And thank you to Dan Jones for that story. Next up is Jesse Bell with CFRC's Environment Canada weather forecast for the Kingston region.
Thank you, Dinah. This is Jesse Bell with your Environment Canada weather report for the Kingston region. Thursday, August 14th, daytime high of 27 degrees, feeling closer to 29. Sunny conditions, but lower humidity than the last few weeks we've had here in the city of Kingston. Friday, August 15th, daytime high of 27, feeling closer to 30. Sunny day, high UV index of 7, but once again, lower humidity than we've seen in recent weeks. Saturday, August 16th, it's going to be humid with some hazy sunshine, so a bit more of those wildfire smoke clouds rolling into Kingston again, feeling closer to 31, and yeah, it's going to be hazy, so maybe stay indoors on Saturday, August 16th. Sunday, August 17th, we once again have rain and a thunderstorm forecasted, high of 28, feeling closer to 34, so extremely humid. Perhaps that higher humidity will bring about a storm. It's been a dry drought condition here in Kingston and the greater areas, so rain is much needed. And then moving into the start of next week, Monday, August 18th, daytime high of 24, projected to feel much less humid, though, with just a daytime high feeling like 25. So if we get that thunderstorm on Sunday, it looks like the start of next week will be a little more bearable and nice.
And that's a wrap for this week's edition of The Corridor, supported by the Local Journalism Initiative and the Community Radio Fund of Canada. Don't forget to visit cfrc.ca for the latest in local and regional news headlines, concert and events listings, and more. You can also follow CFRC on Facebook and Instagram at CFRC Music and on Twitter X at CFRC. You can support CFRC and its independent news programming by donating via cfrc.ca. We'll be back next week with more in local and regional news. Thank you for joining us. Thank you for listening to this podcast produced at CFRC 101.9 FM at Queen's University in Kingston, Ontario, situated on the traditional territories of the Anishinaabe and Haudenosaunee peoples, and brought to you by the generous support of Smith Engineering.